counting, taking a census of the Jewish people, which is the subject matter of Bamidbar. That is a problematic type of phenomenon, interestingly enough, that it is forbidden in general to take a census of the Jews, take a count. And that's one of the sins that's recorded in Tanakh about King David, that is, that he authorized the census. And afterwards he realized he had committed an avera, sin, and it put about significant punishment. We discussed last year the problems of taking a count, taking a census. However, you do see that in certain circumstances, you're obligated to take a census. So, in a general way, it seems that one can say something about the very fact of taking a census. The census always has to be related to a specific purpose. If it's related to a specific purpose, as Rashi points out, Ramban points out, that that has to do with the true purpose of Kol Yisrael. Ramban offers one of the reasons as being that at that point in time they were on the verge of entering the land. This is before the sin of the Meraglim. Had the spies not sinned, so they would have immediately entered into the land. If that is the case, then they would have had to form military formations. Thus, there's a purpose. And the purpose is for the military, which has to do with a very significant mitzvah, the conquest of the land. So, therefore, the idea of counting can be a double-edged sword. Because whenever you're counting, there's always an objective, there's always a purpose in mind. You don't just count for the sake of counting. So therefore, it's something which requires, I would say, a maker. It requires a specific permit to do it. Most of the time, when a census is taken, it's done for other reasons. People are concerned with growth, per se. People are concerned with numbers. And a lot of it has to do with nationalism, the nationalistic phenomenon. Countries are judged by population. That's a significant element in general. A country has a very small population, so it's not in the same status. The world differentiates between powers, regional powers, first world countries, third world countries, and a lot of it, it's not the only factor, but a lot of it has to do with the physical. Essentially, it's with the physical, with the degree of development from a materialistic standpoint, and population is considered to be significant. That is to say, if there's more people there, so it's a more significant element. That's one of the reasons why a census. It also provides a certain type of security in numbers. So therefore, that type of a census, whenever you're doing it, you're indicating a purpose. This is the purpose of the group. So therefore, you can't do that because Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, is different than any other nation. Its whole foundation, its whole basis, is not the same as other nations. Other nations, their very existence is contingent upon all these physical phenomena. First and foremost, the territory. Take away the territory, you don't have the nation. Inconceivable, France, England, any of the nations, if the territory were removed and the people were dispersed, so the nationhood would end at that point. I don't believe that anybody could contend otherwise, that they'd be to think of the French nation without a land. And then there's other things, the language that unites them, and culture, and the industrial. he obeys, materialistic phenomena. And of course, population. Population is a factor. But the Kol Yisrael is a completely different phenomenon. It's a metaphysical phenomenon. And while the land is significant and important, it's clearly not the essence of the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation survives without the land. It's exile. 2,000 years. And all the other factors, even a common language. Jews in different parts of the world spoke different languages. So essentially what unifies the Jews and what makes them into a nation is the Torah. That's what brings all Jews together. We're all involved in the bris and the covenant. That's the essence of Jewish nationhood. And Jewish statehood is really not an end in itself at all. It's the establishment of a state in the land of Israel. Is to implement the objectives of this society. That's the ultimate situation. And being in the exile is a serious limitation. In terms of fulfilling the ultimate objective of Jewish people, that Nikdashi, the Sofon Israel, that God's name should be sanctified in the midst of Bnei Israel and for all of the world, for all of mankind, that can only be reached when we're in the most appropriate state, not just by being in Israel. Jews are in Israel today. The physical presence in the land per se is not the answer. There's nothing magical about it. It needs to establish a certain type of a society, which bases itself, its entire way of life, its system of living, its way of life, its culture, all of it stems from the Torah. When we say the Torah, it's not only the performance of the mitzvah, which is of course crucial, but it's a certain type of performance which is based upon understanding, wisdom, knowledge, implementation, to transform yourself into a different type of an individual and into a different type of a society. A different type of a society is Am Kadosh. That's the holy nation. That is the ultimate goal, to become an Am Kadosh. And once you become an Am Kadosh, so then a holy nation, that is the objective. Then the entire world will be affected by this. First, you have to work on perfecting yourself. The Jews cannot be directly engaged in trying to perfect the world. Something that you can't do directly. It's an impossibility. What's referred to as Tikkun Olam, the perfection of mankind. You can't directly get involved in that. There's a format. There's an order. What you can do is yourself. Each individual, of course, works on himself. In general, most people don't have the kind of influence that extends too far beyond themselves to be able to influence large groups of people. Everything depends upon the level of the individual. Each person is only expected to do what he's capable of. But when I say to work on yourself, I'm talking about the Jewish people as a whole, Kol Yisrael. Kol Yisrael has to work on perfecting itself. When Kol Yisrael reaches that stage where it's perfected, then the other factors, elements where it impacts upon Tikkun Olam, to bring about God's purposes in the entire world, that happens in a natural way. But the nations will see. They'll see that there's something different here. They'll see that there's something unique. And then they'll begin to change their attitude. Therefore, the idea of a census is contrary to the very fundamental idea of Kol Yisrael. I just want to think, I want to tell you what I said last year, just for a brief summation. The counting connotes two attitudes. One is a sense of ownership, that this is mine. A person who has a large portfolio, a businessman, the owner, takes an inventory of what he's got. So that's an expression of the sense of ownership, the pride in ownership, that it's mine. But that idea, that this is our nation, that's an idea that other people have. Because that's what they take pride in, and there's truth in it. It is their nation. They've established the nation. But that type of pride, that this is our people, this is my people, this is my nation, this nationalistic phenomena doesn't exist in true Judaism. Because it's the nation of God. Am zu yatzarti li, says in Yeshaya, in Isaiah. This nation I have formed unto me. Ilosai yisateru. My praises they will tell. It states clearly that God is the source of the existence of the nation. And the second part is the purpose. That God formed this nation for a purpose. And that purpose is to be the one who teach the true ideas of God to the world. The second thing we mentioned was that the implication of numbers is a negation of the providence, divine providence. It is to say that ultimate power resides in the physical, in numbers. Why do I hear that sneeze? Drive a certain sense of security from numbers. They have this saying, in union there is strength. There's truth to that on a certain level. No one's going to deny that. There is truth to the fact that numbers are an element of power and unity and all of that. No question. But not in an ultimate sense for the Jewish people. The person maintains that attitude, that's what's referred to in Devarim, as kochi va'ot and yadi, also liya tachay laza, that the Jews one day will adopt the attitude that all of the benefits that they have are really a result of their own productivity, their own power. And that's a complete negation of the truth of God. So I believe that that's another reason why a census would be prohibited, unless it's in the context of the service of God for the sake of building the Mishkan or other activities where there's nothing inherently wrong with the census, but it has to be connected to the true purpose of Klal Yisrael. Okay, that's just a brief summation. All right, guys, anything else? No questions today?
Back
to the census that's recorded in this parasha of Bamidbar. Something unusual when it comes to the count of the tribe of Levi. What's that noise? How much guys, counting of the Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, was different in terms of the age. There were two countings of Shevet Levi. One was the Levites from the age of 30 to 50. That was one counting. And the reason for that age was, as opposed to the ordinary Jews who were counted from the age of 20, which was 20 was from the time that they were eligible to serve in the military. With regard to the Levium, they were counted from the age of 30 to 50, because that was the point at which they were eligible to serve in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. That is, they couldn't do so before 30, and they couldn't do so after 50. So, in general, we can understand this without going into all the particulars. One can ask why the age of 30, and why is the cutoff point the age of 50? But in the general sense, a person has to reach a certain level. This is the most significant form of the service of God. In the temple, it requires a great deal of attention on many different levels. So a person has to reach a certain degree of maturity until he's able to be entrusted with this type of avoda, this type of service. And at a certain point in time, he becomes too old, because there is a physical burden as well. So, in a general sense, without going into all the particulars, we understand, it makes sense, that before a person reaches a certain degree of maturity, not just physically, but intellectually and morally, certain levels, he can't do the avoda. And then he can only do the avoda when he's in a certain prime. He has to remain in a certain state, in the prime of life, so to speak. But as a person gets older, he may get weaker, and therefore, there's a cutoff point. So that we understand. But then there's another counting of Shevet Levi, of the tribe of Levi, which counts every individual from the age of 30 days, 1 month. Essentially, that means from birth. The only reason why it has to be 1 month is a general reason that we have the concept that a newborn child, it's not clear to us that this child is going to live, as him, so to speak, that the child is viable, this viability factor, until the child has lived 30 days. Once he's lived 30 days, so we can assume a certain viability. So, of course, the question is, well, why the need for two counts? And the first one we understand, and it fits into our concept. Essentially, we can derive from this confirmation of what we said, that the counting is for a particular purpose, not just the idea of counting, but it's related to a specific purpose, which is a vital element of Klal Yisrael, which is the avoda, the service in the Beis Hamikdash. So that makes sense, the age of 30. But what is the point of counting the Levi from birth? At which point he's really not capable of doing anything. Alright, that's the question, right?
Yeah, no.
Now you can answer me when I, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, fine. I just want to make sure we're on the same page. Okay. Any thoughts before we go further? We'll go to the Rambam, but if you guys have any ideas, it's fine. No? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the Rambam in the Mishnah Torah, in the section, the laws of Shemitah and Yovel, in the last chapter, chapter 13, the last few halachos, he discusses the fact that Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, did not have an inheritance in the land of Israel. When the land was divided, they did not have any particular inheritance. He discusses that in the last two halachos, 12 and 13. In 12, he says, why did Levi not merit, not warrant, a share in the inheritance of the land of Israel and all of the spoils that were attained when they conquered it, together with their brothers? It is because they were separated to serve God. Serve God. What's another word for service? And minister before him. And not only that, Ulahoros Drachav Ayesharim, and to teach his straight path, Mishpata, Atadikim, and his righteous ordinances, laws, Lo Rabin, to the masses. And Emerald says, Yoru Mishpatecha Yaakov, they will teach your laws to Yaakov, the Torahcha to Israel, and your Torah to Israel. Which is very interesting, because until now we simply think of Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, specifically with regard to one thing, the Beit HaMikdash, the service in the temple. Now we see that it's something completely different. In addition, that is. Not as opposed to it, but in addition, it's something which seems to be completely different. That they're supposed to be the teachers of Israel. Interesting to take note of the way Drachav HaYishara, Mishpatav HaTzadikim. What does he just say? One can ask, why does the Rambam have to emphasize that they have to teach Drachav HaYishara, his straight way, and Mishpatav HaTzadikim, and his laws, righteous laws? Why not just simply say his Torah? His laws, we know that they're righteous. Why does the Rambam have to emphasize that at this point? And what's the connection between the two? Essentially, the Havdalah of Shevet Levi the separation, the designation, seems to be for the English. This is what he's mentioning over here is an entirely different purpose. What's the connection between the two? Is it, one can say, well, they have two purposes, two missions. Is it two missions, or are they interrelated? Okay, anybody? That's the first step. Very fascinating idea. This wouldn't exist in any other culture. If you guys want to, talk to me now, it's okay. I'm not, I'm giving you a chance.
Is it possible that, the reason why they must also teach is because the Rambam first went out of his way to say that they're distinguished.
Right.
So, and if they're the ones who minister to God, and they don't, they get their own person, they get their own little lands, and...
Well, he hasn't gotten into that yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, he asked that question, he's on the way to explain it. This is the cause, now he's going to have to connect it to the effect. But I'm trying to, you heard my question, I'm saying, what is the two missions? Most people think of David Levy in terms of one mission, the Avoda. So now, all right, you can say, look, we got your two jobs. Sometimes you get two jobs. You work for a school, you have to administer, and you also have to teach. You can be two separate things, or whatever. Is it two jobs or one job? That's my question. But this is fascinating. A good one to stay up all night foolish when you stay up all night, if anybody does.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just leave you at this point.
No.
Okay. But you want to come out here. Stay up all night with me. No one has any ideas. I'm a little surprised. Generally, you guys are brimming with ideas.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you're all exhausted from preparing for the foolish here. In my opinion, these are two interrelated ideas, two interconnected ideas. Interesting. I don't have the sale tale at the Salel. There's an interesting machlokas. Record it. Let me see if I can find it. Anyone remember that? By the Salel, by the Mishkan?
The what?
Because there was a machlokas between him and Moshe Rabbeinu, whether you should build the Mishkan first or the Kalim first.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And I think Moshe said you should build the Kalim first, I think. And he said you should build the Mishkan first.
Right.
And, both sides make sense, but Moshe agrees that Shem of the tail kale in the shadow of God. In other words, it shows that he had a tremendous understanding of the purposes of the Mishkan. If I could find that quickly, it would help.
Hang on, go ahead.
Right, man?
Yeah.
I think I found the Rashi. It's in Pekudei. Give me a second. Instruction of the Mishkan and the service. In the Mishkan and the Beit HaMikdash and the Holy Temple,
should not just be done by anyone. It has to be done by people who have the greatest degree of understanding of the purposes of the avoda. And this is seen in an interesting Rashi in Shemot. That will be chapter 38 in Sukkudei, Pasuk 22. The Pasuk says, "Uvatalel ben Uri ben Chur l'mati Yehuda, also et kol asher tiva Hashem et Moshe." Uvatalel was involved in the construction of the Mishkan. He was a person of tremendous skill. But Rashi says on that verse, he says, he did everything. Kol asher tiva Hashem et Moshe. The Rashi points out, Asher tiva oto Moshe ain't sifkan. It doesn't say that which Moshe commanded. El kol asher tiva Hashem et Moshe. But rather it says all that God has commanded Moshe. In other words, you can see from the pasuk itself that it lends itself to the explanation. But it should have said that Bezalel did everything that Moshe had commanded him. But rather it says he did everything that God had commanded Moshe, which carries a certain implication. Which Rashi says, even the things that his master, that his Moshe, had not told him to do, his understanding, his knowledge, was in accordance with what God told Moshe. That's what it means. It says he did everything in accordance with what God told Moshe, even though Moshe hadn't conveyed it to him. What's that referring to? The Rashi says, because Moshe commanded Bezalel to make first the vessels and afterwards construct the tabernacle. Bezalel said to him, it's the custom of the world first to build the house and afterwards to put the vessels inside of it. So then Moshe said to him, that's exactly what I heard from God. Apparently Moshe then remembered that that's what he heard from God. Amar Moshe, the Moshe said, Bezalel kel hayisa. You certainly were in the shadow of God. He divided, I kach tivoli HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because certainly that's what God commanded me. So in general, of course, the Talmud is not part of the Shevet Levi, but I'm just illustrating the idea that the people who were chosen to be involved in the construction of the Mishkan, let alone how much more so to be involved in the actual service, were people of tremendous skill, craftsmanship, artisans, but it wasn't just a physical skill. They also had to have a deep understanding of the metaphysical purposes. And that's the purpose of making this clear from Bezalel, the Sale Kale. And you see, there are, of course, the Rambam discusses the significance of the service in the Beit HaMikdash. That's the highest level of service of God, but it has tremendous dangers as well. And it's subject to possible corruption, as we see this took place, unfortunately, in the course of Jewish history. And so the corruption was such that the Mikdash had to be destroyed. However, the purpose, the setup, the plan, calls for the avoda to be implemented at the highest possible level, which means that a person has to have a total grasp of the purposes of Torah. Not just the halachos, the particulars, but he also has to have a tremendous grasp of the ideas, the philosophy, the values, the perfection. It can only be administered by perfected people. So these two missions, these two activities, go together. You can't have a separate class of people that are going to be involved in the service in the temple and a different class of people that dedicate their lives to study. That you'll have in other nations, is compartmentalization. Because essentially, their activities, insofar as they involve what they would call worship, are ritualistic and simplistic and catered to the imagination. There's no intellectual perfection involved at all. In Yahadah, to the contrary, all of the performances, all of the mitzvot, are expressions, concretizations, implementations of the most profound ideas. And a person derives perfection from the performance of a mitzvah insofar as it makes an impact upon him in terms of the knowledge, the truth, that they express and they reflect. This is the highest degree of perfection. way it had to be this way. Couldn't be any other way. That's what the Rambam says, that they were separated for two things. To serve God, to minister, that's a reference to the Beit HaMikdash, Ulaharos Rachav, Hayisharim, and to teach his straight path, Uvishpata Vatadikim, Laravim. Interesting, we raised the question, why is the Rambam say to teach the laws, the mitzvah? No, to teach the righteous path, which indicates more than just the mitzvah, of course the mitzvah. But a person can be an expert in halachic performance doesn't mean that he's an expert in terms of the philosophy, the correctness, the righteousness of the laws. That's a reference to the philosophy. When a person understands the deeper concepts and he understands human nature and he sees how this truly reflects the highest possible level of perfection, that's what we're talking about. That's why the Rambam describes it in that way. Therefore, he says, "Lasicha chundelu midarchei ha'olam." Because of this, they have been separated from the ways of the world. So the idea that they don't receive nachla, inheritance, is a specific, but it illustrates a broader category. Now we understand the basis for it. They are to be separated from all of the normal involvement of the world in terms of the ordinary requirements of a state. Lo orchin luchama kishar Yisrael. They don't engage in war like the rest of Israel. Lo nochalin, they don't inherit. Lo zochem yasvam b'kal gufam, and they don't obtain for themselves through their physical prowess. That is to say, the rest of Israel is involved in the struggle for existence, and they use their physical prowess, and that's how they build and they accomplish. But Shevet Levi is separated. They're under a special hashkacha, a special divine providential protection. Elohim Chayel Hashem. They are the army of God. Shenemar Baruch Hashem Chayel. That's a reference in Zohar Bracha. That God blesses his Chayel, his army. They have a certain relationship, his legion. They stand in a separate position vis-a-vis Klal Yisrael. V'hu Baruch Hu Zohar Lahem. And he blesses the he is the one who obtains for them. He causes them to obtain what they need. Shenemar, as it says, Ani chelkecha, I am your portion, v'nachalatcha, and your inheritance. Let's just pause for a moment. That's an amazing thing. You understand?
Yeah.
That's the kedusha. They're in a separate, because they are in a separate relationship to God, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is a higher level of kedusha, of holiness. The essence of that holiness, however, no one should think that there's something of an aristocracy. We'll soon see that this does not necessarily apply only to people from that shevet. There's one shevet that was humble, that was set aside for that. But once a person reaches that exalted level of existence, he comes under a particular divine providence. Because he's serving Hashem, that's the legions of God, and God, therefore, is his protector. And God provides for him. Because he's utilizing all of his power. He's separating them from the ordinary pursuits of mankind and directing it to fulfilling the purposes of God in this world. Then the Rambam goes on to say, "Hello, Shevet Levi Buvad." This is not applicable only to the tribe. So the idea of Levi, of Shevet Levi, is a concept. So essentially, it applies to a particular shevet that was set aside for that. But the designation can apply to anyone who takes upon himself this role. And that's interesting. No, I'm just showing you that that shows that these two purposes are interconnected. Because if it was a separate, if they were separate things, so then how can he say that any Jew could be partake of it? Because then no Jew, no matter how much he's involved in learning, can partake of the temple. He can't do the avodah. You see that it's really one thing, and the essence is the knowledge. Okay, I'm reading your gimel now. Any person whose spirit leads him and his knowledge, his understanding, causes him, when he badeh, separate. L'amor b'fnei Hashem. Standing before God. V'sharta. To minister to him. We are going to serve him. Now, this is very fascinating. What are we talking about here? The ordinary Israelite, no matter how much he's affected, no matter how much the Spirit moves him, separate, can't do the service. He can't go into the Beit HaMikdash. Hazara Karev Yuma. Anyone who's not a Kohen or a lady, depending upon what we're talking about, will be killed. Rama means that the ultimate ministering, the ultimate service, is L'Deya Es Hashem. This day, in terms of knowledge of God, Malach Yasha, who walks in a certain path, a straight path, a person who turns aside from the path of ordinary mankind, and on the basis of his deep wisdom and knowledge and discernment, he devotes himself entirely to the true service of God. Now, the true service of God is the teaching of the path, the correct understanding of the Torah. Moshe Asar Elokim, and he lives in the straight path in accordance with the manner in which he was created. Most people don't live in accordance with the manner in which they were created or designated. They follow a different path. He parak me'al tavoro, and he casts off from his shoulders all hacheshbonos harabim asher bikshu bnei adam. An amazing expression. The yoke of the many calculations that mankind is in search of. It means to say that everybody is pursuing his own personal agenda. That has nothing to do with the purpose that he was created for. Completely preoccupied, obsessed with all of his calculations and his schemes and his deals and his businesses and his empires, all of these things which essentially are not really necessary. Of course, we're not talking about someone who's working in terms of the purpose, in terms of the necessary means. We're talking about most of mankind. People are in pursuit of their own agenda, whether it's businesses, their careers. That's a reference to these endless cheshbonos, these calculations. The person casts that off his shoulders. A reason is kadesh kodesh kadesh. This person has then become sanctified, holy of holies. Which is to say, that's essentially the holiness of Shevet Levi. V'yi Hashem chelko v'nachalas uliyom me'olam. God will be his portion and his inheritance eternally. The Yiskelo Bola Mazeh, and will benefit him in this world, Dabar Hamastiklo. All right, you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. God will provide him with Dabar Hamastiklo, that which he needs. That's the true wealth. Doesn't say with tremendous treasures, wealth, and davar hamastik lo, that which he needs. Just like God benefited the Kohanim, the Levim. One second. All of Hashem Omer, David says in Tehillim, Hashem Menas Chelki, Kochi Ata Tomech Doro. I'm sorry, the Kochi. Correction, the Kochi. Hashem and Askelki, the Kochi. Ata Tomech Doro. Since Hashem is my allotted portion and my share, you guide my destiny. That is the way the Rambam interprets this concept. That's the essence of Shevet Levi. The tribe of Levi and the essence of their Kedusha. And indeed, the only thing that they have, which makes them unique, is the ability to do the service in the Beit HaMikdash. That itself, in and of itself, is not the essence of their Kedusha. We've seen that their mission is Yoru Mishpatech Liyarko. Their mission is to be completely immersed in the study of Torah in order to be able not just to gain knowledge of the Torah on a halachic level, but to understand the deep wisdom and perfection the righteousness of the ordinances that bring a person to the highest degree of perfection. That's the ultimate service of God. The ultimate service of God is Yoram Mishpatach V'Yakov. They teach your ordinances to Yaakov, the teaching of the two ideas of Torah. That's the ultimate service of God. And thus the Rambam says, when they do that, they separate themselves from the ordinary path of mankind, which is guided by a different degree of providence, and they come under a special providential protection. And thus he says that any individual who, as a result of his own spirit and his understanding, removes from himself this type of a yoke, he dedicates himself to this task, comes under the same protection. Right. Now we can understand the idea of the two counts. It reflects the two aspects of the mission of the tribe of Levi. The most significant one, the most fundamental one, is in the attainment of the knowledge, the real service. That is the Yoram Mishpatach V'Yakov. They will teach your ordinances to Yaakov. That's a lifelong involvement in perfection, in study, in working on oneself, in gaining understanding, in reaching a degree of perfection. That Kedusha is manifest at birth. That's the point in time when you have to count at birth, 30 days, as soon as viable. Because that involves every aspect of life. Earliest training, upbringing, for this objective, for this purpose. That's why they counted at birth. That's the ultimate designation. That's their whole life. There's no cutoff point as far as that is concerned. However, there's another mission, and that is to do the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. That's a very significant point, that the avoda in the Beit HaMikdash, the service in the temple, cannot be performed by anybody. It can only be performed by those who understand the ideas and the Torah at the highest possible level. That's a specific aspect of the mission, in particular. In fact, it doesn't constitute the ultimate, the essence of what that holiness is about. That is from 30 to 50. So that's why it now makes perfect sense that Shevet Levi goes through two different kinds of senses. One is for the general, is reflective of the general Kedusha, the general holiness of the Shevet. That begins at birth. The other one is for the specific activity which is a result. Because of that general perfection, they have been chosen to perform a particular activity in terms of Kol Yisrael, in terms of the avoda, the service in the Beit HaMikdash. That's a separate census that is extremely important, because you have to demonstrate that the service in the Beit HaMikdash can only be done by people who partake of that perfection. That's from 30 to 50. Okay?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, it's good for the question. Important stuff.
Yeah, this reminds me that you once gave an idea by Mila.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that. Why you have Mila for a child who's only 8 days old?
Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah. Oh, that's Kedusha. That's a good point. That's a good point. The designation. Yeah. It's being mentioned that this idea that certain type of designation, in terms of a general purpose in life, has to begin as early as possible, similar to the idea we mentioned by Bris Mila, by the circumcision, which designates the person as being part of the Bris, as being part of the covenant. It gives a certain identity to the individual that's extremely important in determining the whole course of the person's life. That's done at the age of 8 days. That's done on the child of infant. It's a similar idea. Okay.
Right then. Right then?
Yes.
Would you be interested in possibly taking that a step further, and if some of this ties into that, to the Rashi, that he says that We know that Levi gets counted at 30 because 30 days because there was a count when they entered into Mitzrayim. That the 70th person was born as they walked into Mitzrayim. So that's how we know Levi gets counted at such a young age.
I never. What do you mean? That seems to be like a purely.
That seems very arbitrary. I wonder if this idea, like, you can, this idea somehow ties into.
I'll try to think about it. Yeah, I don't have anything immediate. I'll think about it.
Okay.
All right, guys. Good job.
Thank you very much.
Okay.